Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve off-court problems. They'll talk about the latest news in college and professional basketball with coaches like Jim Boeheim, former players like Stephanie White, basketball analysts like Grant Hill, and more. Revealing insights that made them into the leaders they are today. And don't miss President Obama, sharing how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism.
Jordan Schreiber, I know it's still early, but any idea on how you think Notre Dame would match up with Alabama or Georgia in the playoff next year?
I mean, you started it off, Jordan. It's way too early for that. I mean, I need to see exactly what everything looks like on paper, right? I mean, the Alabama and Georgia that we saw last year is not going to be what it is this year. I think this is safe to say, and I could be completely wrong about this. I think Georgia's going to take a pretty significant step back. Like, they're not going to be what they were last year. Like, that was an anomaly, in my opinion, right? Like, I think they're still going to be they're going to be a double-digit win team and contending for an SEC championship, but they're not going to be a defense that allows, 11 points a game or some crazy number? Like, it was a ridiculous number, right? So, I think both teams are going to be very good because they are historically. I think that what Notre Dame has, an advantage, but one spot that I think I feel better about than I do would historically against an Alabama or Georgia is that I think that both teams' secondaries are not going to be as good as they have been in year past, at least at the cornerback position, right? Yeah. So if Notre Dame's wide receivers take a step forward, which I think they will, I think that you match up better against Kool-Aid McKistry and even Akili Ringo, even though he's very talented, but like he needs to take a massive step forward. Like, the cornerback positions at both teams are not quite as good. So it's the thing where, like, I think it's not a traditional matchup. Like, it's not what we would typically think of as Notre Dame having disadvantages in certain spots, but I have to see it on paper before I give you a complete analysis on it.
I think Alabama's going to take a step back offensively this year, but I think they're going to be a lot better on defense because I think the front seven is still going to be really good, especially if they're able to find a way to get Will Anderson and Dallas Turner on the field together, which I think that they will. So I think they'll be better on – I don't say a lot better. I think they're going to be better on defense this year because I think last year, one of the things that hurt them late in the year last year is something that's going to help them this year, and that is a lot of the guys that were not good DBs were hurt by the end of the year, which allowed younger guys to get opportunities to play. They got Eli Ricks, but I don't trust that kid to, you know, as far as I can throw him. You know, he's a talented kid, but you don't know if he's going to be suspended or just not be in his right mind or a very immature kid. But I agree with your point. That's an area where I think Notre Dame can have some success, and they're going to have a heck of a time covering Michael Mayer because none of their safeties are great cover guys, in my opinion, especially against a guy like Michael Mayer. It comes down to is Notre Dame's offensive line as good as we think, and is can Tyler Buckner make plays? That's what's going to come down to for me. I think Notre Dame's defensive line can have success in this game because I think Notre Dame's defensive line in 2022 is going to be better than their defensive line was in 2020. And that 2020 defensive line more than held its own against Alabama. And this is going to be a better Notre Dame D line and not as good of an Alabama offensive line, in my opinion. So I think there's some matchups where Notre Dame has some advantages. Can they pressure Bryce Young and can they create big plays on offense? Those are going to be the questions in that kind of matchup. Georgia, I think is a matchup that I think would bode well for Notre Dame. I actually like the Georgia matchup better than I do like the Alabama matchup, just because at the end of the day, I mean, who are you more concerned about, stopping Stetson Bennett or stopping Bryce Young? And I'm more concerned about stopping Bryce Young. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually think Ohio State's a tougher matchup for Notre Dame this year than Georgia would be. That's just my two cents. We're talking about this before you get on the show. Look, I know the 15 draft picks and all that kind of stuff, but the reality is Georgia had talent, but that was not a great team. It was a really good team. They played no one in the regular season. The first good team they played in the regular season, if you can count the title game as a regular season, was Bama, and Bama destroyed their defense. Because they didn't have a great pass defense. It's just they only played one team that could do any damage on them. That was Tennessee. But by the time they got to the second quarter, Tennessee was down to like one of their top five or four or five receivers. And so I was not as in love with that defense compared to other people. It was really, really good. I'm talking about the thoughts of one of the greatest defenses of all time, all this other kind of stuff. Right. And, you know, I mean, because how many of the guys that got drafted high were like, wow, that guy got overdrafted, right? I mean, so that doesn't mean they weren't really good. It just, like, this wasn't Miami 2001, right? That this was not that.
No.
And so, you know, I think, and you lost, but you lost all those guys. And now, does Tyler Buchner take a step? Do the receivers take a step? Is the O-line as good as we think? Can they cover people in the secondary? Like, there's a lot of questions. All of what I just said is dependent on all those things being answered in the affirmative. Right. And so that would be my two cents.
Good call on the Tennessee game, by the way. Hendon Hooker actually had a really good start against Georgia that game. He looked pretty good early.
Because they had one of their top receivers was still playing. And once he went down, which was like late first, early second quarter, I mean, it was a lot tougher. He sure passed for over three bills in that game. It was some chunk plays. They weren't quite as good. But yeah, I mean, there were opportunities there to be had. And there were other chances they could have had plays, but the pass rush just got to him. And that won't happen, I think, this year because there's no Trayvon Walker. There's some of the guys they had last year that are really good at rushing the quarterback, aren't they? And I know Nolan Smith is back and he's really good and all that, but
I mean, they have him and they have Jalen Carter, who's a dude. Yeah. But like, other than that,
they had him last year too, along with the other guys that are now in the NFL, and that's kind of my point.
Sure.
Adam Anderson was out by that time, correct?
Yeah, I think he only played like the first five or six games. That kid was so good. It's a shame he did what he did. Yeah. But yeah.
That he was accused of. I'll still give him the innocent until proven guilty, but it sounds pretty bad.
It sounds really bad, yep.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
John Ed with the Super Chat. This is a good one. You get to take one player from any Notre Dame team, past or present, and add him to any Notre Dame team from 2000 to 2021 range to win a championship. Who do you take as your difference maker?
Wow.
I still am going to go with there's two options. If I can take someone that signed with Notre Dame, I'm putting Randy Moss in there, right? But if you got to take from a guy that actually played, For me, Ryan, I'm going with, I would still say bring Justin Tuck back in 05. And that's a simple one. That's not even like taking Isaiah Foskey from now back to then. I'm just saying take Justin Tuck from the 04 team and let him play his final year, because I think it was his fifth year. He left after his senior year, but he had another year of eligibility left, I believe. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong on that. I would say you put Justin Tuck on that 05 team. They lost in overtime to Michigan State. I don't think that happens. And they lost late against USC, which I don't think happens if Justin Tuck plays. Mm-hmm. And so when I see that, I said, boy, I would have loved to have seen what that team could have done with Justin Tuck at defensive end. Opposite Victor Abimiri with Trevor Laws and Derek Landry on the inside. That would have been a fun team to watch.
Was it the 2017 team, the one that you said you thought could win a championship? Was that the one?
They had a better quarterback, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to take Brady Quinn. I'm going to dump him into 2017. Yeah.
That's an interesting one. I don't know if he would have been the type of quarterback that I would have liked to have seen. I think I might have taken like a more of a mobile guy, like maybe a Jarius Jackson, you know, because, again, that team was going to run the football a ton.
Sure.
And, you know, I would say here's what I'll cheat and say. Give me Brady Quinn as the quarterback, and then I'm going to cheat and take a position coach. I'm going to give him a new receivers coach. Right. Can I do that? Because then you'd have had someone that would have decided to play Miles Boykin and Chase Claypool instead of Cam Smith and Freddie Canteen in a game they lost by 1 point to Georgia. Is that fair? Can I cheat and do that?
That's fair. I'll give that to you.
I think that 2017 team with better quarterback play would have been really, really tough to beat. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, the 2015 team is one where there's not players I would change out. There's coaches I would change out. Cause I thought that team, the roster, like, Sean and I talk about this all the time, and like the 15 players are like, man, if Malik doesn't get hurt and Torian doesn't get hurt, and I'm like, forget that. If they still got hurt and you had better coaches, you still win a title that year, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Malik got hurt. That was before Deshaun kind of lost his way, but, you know, I mean, you lost Torian, you still had CJ Procise and Josh Adams, right? I mean, it was a coaching problem. That was about as loaded of a team as Notre Dame is going to have. It was a coaching issue. And, you know, that to me is something that you look at and say, boy, if that team would have had better coaching, they might have been a problem for a lot of people. And, you know, I'll stick to that one. So these are fun questions. They really are. They're very fun questions. Like here's one for you, Ryan. Mm-hmm. What if the 2020 team had the 2018 corners? Julian Love and Troy Pride.
Instead of, what was it,
Nick McCloud and I mean, Tariq Bracy.
Then
he got benched for Clarence Lewis, true freshman Clarence Lewis.
Yeah, it's a lot better of a team.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
I mean, put any top quarterback on some of those teams. Like the 2018 team, what if the 2018 team had a better quarterback?
That's fair.
You know?
That's fair, yeah.
So that's one where I'd put Brady Quinn on, that one right there.
2018?
Because here's why. The overall roster would have been different with Brady, because Brady had his own version of Samardzija and Stovall in 2018 with Chase Claypool and Miles Boykin, right? I mean, that's what he liked to do. He liked to throw those back shoulders and all that stuff. He would have thrown those deep balls that Ian wasn't throwing against Clemson. He would have thrown those. Brady was not afraid to throw those passes.
Brady was not afraid to throw a football, man. He had some conviction every deep ball he threw. I mean, how many Duval Kamara highlights were just him chucking the ball up deep to Duval Kamara, you know, as he went. I mean, not Duval Kamara. I mean,
Jeff Samardzija.
No, I wasn't even talking about Samardzija.
Most Stovall.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't know why. I just both 6'5" and long. Right. Yeah. There we go. Yeah.
Yep.
Duval Kamara.
Yep. Whoops. Yeah, no, you had to go with the jersey guy. I get it. I completely understand.
You got to give him and Theo Riddick and all the dudes some love, you know? Gotta happen.
But I mean, if you look at that 15 team, though, for example, they had eight kids, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, seven kids drafted that next year from that team. Two first rounders, two second rounders, two third rounders, a fourth rounder. The next year, starters from that team went in the second round and the seventh round. And then the next year, starters from that team went in first, fourth, and sixth. And then in 19, you had a starter from that team go in the first round. So that 15 team had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 first-round draft picks on it. Now, they weren't all first-round draft picks at that time. Like, Jerry Tillery wasn't a first-round draft pick in 2015, but he was still a talented player that started on that football team as a true freshman. You know, but you had Ronnie Stanley, Will Fuller were first-round picks, Quentin Nelson, Mike McGlinchey were first-round picks. I would argue that they did play like that kind of guy. I thought Mike McGlinchey's best year was still 2015 as a right tackle. I still think that was his best year at Notre Dame. And, of course, you had Ronnie Stanley, and then, of course, you know, then you had – you know, you had guys like Durham Smythe, who was a fourth-round pick. You had Jalen Smith. That's another one. Jalen Smith would have been a first-round pick if it's not for the knee injury.
Yeah.
Right? And they wouldn't have been playing in the Fiesta Bowl if they had a better coaching staff. Another way that Brian Van Gorder ruined Jalen Smith's career because they weren't playing in the right game. Nick Martin, second-round pick. Kavari Russell's third-round pick. CJ Prosise, third-round pick. Like, the amount of first-, second-, and third-round picks that team had on their roster in 2015 is absurd.
Was Nick Martin was the second round pick, really?
Yep. Of the Houston, wow. He went 51.
Interesting.
He was Nick Martin, 19th pick of the second round.
I knew he was pretty early, but I thought he was a little lower. That's pretty crazy. Mm. Wow.
Yep. Went 51st. Kavari Russell was a third round pick that year. CJ Prosise was a third round pick. Sheldon Day was a fourth round pick. So that team had so much NFL talent. And yep. Romeo Okwara didn't get drafted off that team. But he was a starter in the NFL for multiple years, had a year with over 10 sacks in the NFL. It doesn't even include him. Matthias Farley started for the Colts for an entire year, and he was a backup on that team.
Romeo Okwara has been a quietly good football player in the NFL for a while now. Yep.
So that team was absolutely loaded. So, yes, give me a quarterback on that 18 team or a better coaching staff on that 2015 team. Or, as I said at the beginning, give me Justin Tuck on that 2000. In the spirit of this right here, you give me Justin Tuck on that 2015, on that 2005 team. If he comes back, that would have been a lot of fun. B. Straw, why do you think schools have started moving official visits to May, June? You would think the schools would want to save them for a big game week and show the kids the big game atmosphere. Ryan, can I just quickly address this one? Because most kids are going to be committed by then. And if you wait till then, you're going to be out of the game with a lot of kids. It's pretty cut and dry.
Yep.
Right. Plus, here's another thing. As a coach, practically, I can't give you nearly as much attention when you're on campus for a game weekend. That's why schools are now moving game weekends up to when they're juniors and then bringing them officials for when they're over the summer. Here we go, Ryan. Cricky says, give me your dream class. You finish out the rest of the commitments and you don't have to mention the QB. We don't mind. It's not like he's like, you know, Lord Voldemort, who's, you know, the name we don't speak of. It's just, I'm not going to update his recruitment until there's something new. And there hasn't been anything new that I've heard other than him taking some visits. There's nothing new compared to everything that's reported. I'm just kind of tired of covering that part of it. But I don't mind talking about him, and he's definitely a must get. So Ryan, to answer the question, give me your dream finish. Let's say Notre Dame can get no more than 26.
Okay. Are we still keeping
like every kid on the board, and they signed 37 kids? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Are we still keeping this semi-realistic, or can I give them Richard Young at running back?
I mean, dream finish of something you think is realistic, right? Realistic. But I mean, look, the kid's freaking visiting officially. Here's my thing, Ryan. Mm-hmm. If a kid's going to take an official visit to Notre Dame, I can't tell you it's not realistic they're going to get him. Do I think they're going to get him? No, I don't. But realistic. He's visiting. He's going to make an official visit. So. Yeah, you can include him if you want.
Sure, sure. All right. Well, I'm gonna say I'm not gonna include him because I think it's unfair. Okay. I'm gonna say I'm probably actually gonna start on defense here. Let's start on defense. Dream class, Caleb Downs is added to the safety room with Adon Schuler and Peyton Bowen. Cornerbacks, give me Micah Tees one spot. Give me Micah Bell at the other, and I'm going to take three corners in this class, Brian, because I can. So in that sense, I'll take Christian Gray, all right, okay. as my top three corners there. Linebackers, I'm only going to take one. Well, actually, let me revise. All right, Jay Nosbury.
Are you paying attention to the numbers?
No, not really. Not really. Okay. I'm not going to get the 37, though, I promise.
You do know you only have 85 scholarships to work with.
Right? Yes, I know. I'm don't worry. I'm good here. All right, so Jay Nosbury is a yes. I'm going to leave it just at that one linebacker for now, okay? I'm just going to leave it there. Defensive line, Jason Moore is the last guy in that group. Offensive line, we have to get Monroe Freeling, Charles Jagasaw. I almost called him Jagusa. Higgins. Who am I missing there? We already have Pendleton. You already have Sullivan Abshur. Do we want a fifth offensive lineman? I'm going to skip out on a fifth offensive lineman for number's sake. I'm going to skip out on a fifth offensive lineman. Tight end, you already have your tight end. Wide receivers, Rodney Gallagher, Jaden Greathouse. Do I want to take a fourth? Yeah, I mean, yeah, I want to take a fourth, but do I want to include Ronan Hanifin as a wide receiver or take him as an athlete? I'll just include Ronan Hanifin as a wide receiver there. He's the fourth one on there. And then I'm going to flip the script a little bit. Dante Moore obviously isn't a quarterback. I'm going to say I want Jeremiah Love as a running back, and then I will take Samuel Mpemba as an athlete.
Okay. So Ryan, his dream class is 39 kids. So
it was not 39. It was not 30.
So you got Dante, Jeremiah Love. Yeah. Did you say Jade Lamar?
I did not say Jade Lamar. Okay. I left him out of this
then
one.
Then you said three receivers, right? Gallagher, yep. Greathouse, and then Hanifin. Correct. And you had two offensive linemen, right? Mm-hmm. And then Jason Moore. Then yep. Jordan, you had Mpemba as an athlete, then you had Jaden Osbury as a
linebacker.
Then you had three DBs.
Four DBs, three corners and then one safety.
Okay, so you went 14.
Yep.
Okay.
So 27. Wasn't that bad? Okay. Yeah. Got to 27.
All right. I'm going to stick at 26, but it's going to be very similar. Dante Moore, quarterback. I know that the staff does not agree with me, but I would take Jeremiah Love over Jay Lamar. That would just my 2 cents.
I don't disagree.
I would take three receivers. It would be Rodney Gallagher, Jaden Greathouse, and Ronan Hanifin. And at offensive line, I would only take two because I get, in my dream scenario, Monroe Freeling and Charles Jagasaw commit to me in June. So I don't need to – or in late June, early July. So I don't need to take a fifth guy. Defensive line, Jason Moore. I'm taking Jaden Osbury. I mean, that's a no-brainer. I'm taking Jaden Osbury. I'd go Samuel Mpemba as an athlete, but like linebacker, DN kind of guy. And cornerback, it's very similar. I'm going Micah Bell. I'm not going Christian Gray. I'm going two corners and one safety. So I'm going three DBs. I'm going Micah Bell. I'm going Calvin Simpson-Hunt. And then I'm taking Caleb Downs as my safety. That'd be my dream finish. Wow. You can either have Caleb Downs or you can have Richard Young. Take one or the other, and I'm taking Caleb Downs.
I would do that too. Yeah. 100% do that. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. The corner conversation was interesting. I was almost just going to stick to two, but.
Because my thing is numbers wise, they're actually good numbers wise. They need some impact players. And so I would only take a third guy if it was like a really like high level guy. And I just, I don't know if it was a guy that could play somewhere else. Like if Mike Ateez wanted to be my third corner, I'd take him and give him a shot at receiver if he wanted it. That would be that'd be my dream finish. That would be my dream finish.
So you ended up at what, 26?
26.
26.
Yeah,
because right.
Yeah, I didn't take a fifth offensive lineman.
Right? I didn't either. I just took the extra corner. Yep. Yeah.
That's mine. So that's a good one. That's a very good one. I like questions like that. They're fun, especially for mailbags. John A1 asks, which quarterback do you project to have better Notre Dame career, Dante Moore or Tyler Buchner?
I would say Dante Moore, I guess. I mean, it's an interesting conversation. It really – actually, let me rethink this. Yeah, I'm still gonna go Dante Moore because I like him a little bit better than Tyler Buchner coming out of high school. Like I don't think it's by a ton. I just think it's a little tiny bit. So, and he's going to walk in to a better coaching staff off the get go, right? Like that's the difference for me. So I think Buckner's gonna have a great career. I would just slightly take Dante Moore for that instance.
For me, I'm going to go Dante Moore for a little bit of a different reason, and that is simply that I think he's going to have better players around him. I mean, just top to bottom, I think he's going to have better players around him. Tyler Buckner's going to have very good players around him, but, I mean, we're seeing what this coaching staff's putting together. They could just keep the majority of staff together for 2 to 3 years, just the majority of it. This team is going to be loaded. So I'd probably go Tyler Buchner. Just because of that, I also looking at the schedules Dante's going to face, they're going to be tough, but not quite what I think this year and next year's schedules are going to be. That's also part of it as well. So, I'm like halfway through that. And then I'm like, but man, Tyler Buckner's really dynamic. I mean, honestly, if I wasn't a little bit concerned about Tyler Buchner staying healthy, I might go with him because he's such a dynamic dual threat guy. And my stance on dual threat guys. I love dual threat quarterbacks. So that would probably be where I would go with that, Ryan, is I'm back and forth. If you ask me again tomorrow, I might change my answer. I'm very high on Tyler Buckner, but you know, it is, I think too, is I think Dante Moore, and part of this depends on, you know, how long is Tommy Rees going to be here? Because if Tommy Rees is going to be here for 4 or 5 more years, then my answer changes. It's clearly Dante Moore, because Dante better fits what Tommy's looking for. If you know, let's just say hypothetically that Tommy Rees left after a year and they hired Jeff Lebby as the offensive coordinator, I'd switch it to Tyler Buckner, because I think Jeff Lebby likes that real dynamic dual threat quarterback, right? So that's part of it as well, and at least as far as how I answer the question. DMND13, what are your thoughts on Brady Quinn suggesting we change the phrase from 4 to 40 to 4 for forever? I think that's not practical. I think it sounds cool, but 4 for 40 is practical. You know, you're going to graduate when you're in your 20s. You're going to retire in your 60s, right? And then 4 for 40. 4 for forever, I mean, that's just like, that's getting a little bit too, like, you know, you're a legend forever, and like, you know, I don't know, just
too cliche.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of summing it up.
I don't think, like, why do we need to change it? Does it not work?
I think part of it is everybody's following it. Everybody's trying to steal it and all that. And, you know, just, I don't know. Exactly. I'm with you.
I don't like changing things unless it needs to be changed.
Right. Unless it's not working. And it's working. Exactly. And every kid you talk to brings that up, Ryan, still brings that up with Notre Dame specifically. Ryan, you missed did you see the beginning of how our show started with the conversation of the World War II battleships?
No, I did not.
So John A1 is a Navy man, so he says Iowa would take it. So I'm gonna go with him on that, because he's not only a man of history like I am, but he's also a Navy man. So I think he would have a better feel for that. So I'm glad that John agrees with me on that, because like I said, a smart Navy man's telling me that. So I dig that. RJG Irving, confused by a top 200 ranking, more skilled positions than top 200, and O-line rated 201, might still be one of the best at his position. Is the rating pure athletic ability? I'd have to look at the numbers, RJ, but to just take the premise of what you're saying, I think a lot of it is just, honestly, it's what I've said to you all for years. The rankings are about... they're not about an honest assessment of who the best players are.
Right.
A lot of it's possessed. How many offensive linemen are going to be generating clicks for people?
Right.
Right. I mean,
let's be honest. Some of these people that are making the recruiting, you know, the rankings, are they sitting down and are they grading every single player? I mean, it's a little bit of chaos, to be honest. So yeah, I would say the most honest thing that you can do is to watch a player's film and then give your own assessment on it. Like the Joe Otting thing for me, right? Everyone's like, oh, 3 stars. Just like, that kid's not a 3-star. Like, right. He's not. I mean, it's just, well,
I dude, take I, him I over Austin Cervo every day of the week, and that's a top 200 ranked kid.
100%.
Like, I think the thing for me too is I would say watch the film, listen to people you trust, us and others, look at the offer lists. And look at the ranking. Take them all in, right? Take them all in as part of your overall data points, right? And then say, okay, which of these factors is best reflective of what I feel about this kid, right? Well, this kid's ranked really high, but for some reason, Notre Dame doesn't want him. Bama's not recruiting him, and Georgia's not going after him. Okay, well, that might tell you something, but he's ranked high. Like, remember the kid, Kevin Pine, a few years ago from he was like, Rivals had him as like a 5-star, and
it's like 6-7. People are going nuts.
Like, why isn't Notre Dame offering this kid? And I'm like, because he's not good. Right? Same reason Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State, nobody else, Penn State, nobody else is offering him. You know, he's just not good. But he's ranked as a 5-star. Yeah, because Mike Farrell likes him. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, so just I say take all the data, but then understand that the data can only tell you so much. It can't tell you that this is a 17-year-old kid who's 6'5", 240 now, but he's going to be 310 pounds when it's all said and done, right? Those things can't be projected. And so that's what I say is just don't obsess over the rankings, but don't ignore them either, because they're fun, number one. They're fun. If people look at them correctly, they're fun. And number two, the percentages of success rates does give you some sort of small tidbit of, okay, well, this kid has a chance to be good because of his ranking, but understand that that's not the end all be all. It shouldn't even be your number one thing on the priority list. And then the other thing too is properly understand rank of offers. And just because Bama offers a kid doesn't mean that that shows that, well, he's an elite player, because Bama, like everybody else, has their strengths and has their weaknesses when it comes to evaluation. For example, if Iowa is making a Midwestern lineman a huge priority, you should rethink looking at his film again, right? Because I'll take Kirk Ferentz's evaluation of an offensive lineman over the guy that Georgia just hired, right? And over the guy that Bama had before and Doug Marrone. The new Bama coach, I like what I see from him so far. Right? I think he's a good coach. He did a great job at Kentucky, I think. You know, Kyle Flood, I respected that guy's evaluations because he's one of the best in the business, right? So I look more for, okay, does this program have an opportunity, or does this program have a history of success at a position, right? And are those people, you know, really looking at you know, are those people still there? So I think those are the things that I would factor into that, right? And it's why I say look at those things a little bit more thoroughly.
Full context.
Yep. Josh Miller, do you see how Washington is a must keep? If Golden leaves, do we just upgrade Washington so we don't lose him?
I mean, I don't know enough about Al Washington from a pure defensive coordinator perspective. Like, I don't know how he would call the game, right? So I don't know what the impact would be. I would say you want to keep Al Washington, though. So if that is, that's upgrading him to a, I mean, you mentioned somebody as a passing game coordinator on the offensive side of football. Like, if he wants to be a run game coordinator, you know, as far as the defensive structure, yeah, I would consider it. There's no doubt about it. Cause I think that Al Washington not only is going to be a really good coach for Notre Dame, he's a dynamic recruiter. So yes, if it means upgrading him to a certain position, I would definitely consider it. There's no doubt about it.
In theory, right? This doesn't have to do with Al Washington. In theory, I do not promote assistant coaches to coordinator jobs to keep them somewhere. I don't. You saw that with Ohio State and Kerry Coombs. We've seen this. We saw this with Jimmy Lake at Washington. He kept getting promoted because they didn't want to lose him as a DB coach. But he wasn't a good defensive coordinator. He was solid, and he was a bad head coach. And now the program's a mess. But you did that because you couldn't lose an assistant coach that was doing a phenomenal job as an assistant coach. Jimmy Lake as a DB coach was elite, right? Elite. But now you don't have him, and your program's a hot mess because you kept promoting him to jobs he wasn't capable of. We've seen that with other guys. I think that's kind of what happened with Gene Chizik. Gene Chizik did a really nice job as a D coordinator, and it resulted in him getting a head coaching job, right? And, yeah, he got a national title because he got Cam Newton, but look what he did in every other year he didn't have Cam Newton, right? I mean, we see this all the time with coaches getting promoted because they were really good at one thing doesn't mean you're going to be good at the next thing. That's in theory. So to specifically now Washington – if he's got the chops for the job and Marcus Freeman has the chops for the job, then you flat out promote him if Al Golden leaves, flat out. But only if he has the chops for the job. Now, if you think he's got some strengths, but I'm not sure if he can run the whole defense by himself, then like Ryan said, hire him a pass game coordinator that maybe can help him in an area where he's not as strong, right? I'm cool with that. But yes, I would love to make sure that you do what you can to keep Al Washington. But you also have to understand is, do you make that move knowing that a good year from Al Washington means he's probably head coach somewhere? You know, that could be a negative. It could be a positive. Hey, let's let these guys run this off at defense for a year. And we, cause we can win with them. And we know that Al's going to be a head coach next year. And then I can go out and, you know, do something different. That may be part of the conversation too. But if a guy's got the chops to be a coordinator, I don't really care that he's ever done it before. So I don't care about his experience. But if Marcus Freeman feels like, boy, this guy can call a defense. We saw how he worked during pregame. We saw the suggestions he would make in game. Like, he has a knack for this. Yeah, promote him. I'm totally fine with that. And give him a big pay raise to make sure you can keep him as long as possible. Because the more money you pay him as a D coordinator, the more head coaching jobs he'll turn down to stay until the right head coaching job comes along. So Brent Venables, we've seen other coaches in the past. And I have a feeling Al Washington's one of those guys that understands the value in taking the right job. Every coach should know this. Take the right job, not just a job. Just because it's a head coaching job doesn't mean it's better than your current situation as a coordinator deal as a position coach, right? So that would be part of it as well. But it's a very interesting scenario. But I understand why people want to have that to happen, Ryan, because he is, I mean, in 5 months, he's absolutely crushed so far his job. And not just with, I mean, I thought the D-line looked really good in the blue-gold game. I mean, just across the board, the technique was improved, the motor was improved. The D-line played really well. So I think even there, he's doing really, really well.
They were flying around. That whole defense was flying around. It was impressive.
Tyler Evans says, what team would like Notre Dame to play that you would like Notre Dame to play that they never played before, also home and home format?
They've never played before. Wow. Man, I need like a word bank of all the teams that they haven't played before, you know?
Yeah.
Like in front of me.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up now to see some teams that they've never played before. I'm going to go through here. There's a site called Winzipedia, which like lists all the teams they've played. It's a really cool site. I really like it. But let's go through. Let's see here. The ACC, Big 10, Big 12. Okay, Big 12, they've played Texas and Oklahoma. TCU, they've played once. I didn't know they played TCU. I forgot about that. When did they play TCU? 1972. All right. That would be why I forgot about it, because it was before I was born. I probably never actually knew about it.
Here's one. Apparently Notre Dame has never played Auburn.
No, I don't really care about SEC teams.
I'm just saying they're pretty substantial.
Yeah, they've played Arkansas. Here's the nurse. The SEC teams they've never played. They've never played Arkansas, which will change soon because they have a home and home set up with them. They've never played Auburn. They've never played Mississippi State. They have played Ole Miss twice. They actually lost to Ole Miss one of the years that they won a title. I think the year that Dan Devine won a national title, I think they lost to Auburn or Ole Miss early in the year. They've played Georgia three times, 0-3. Pac-12, they've played just about everybody in the Pac-12, I believe. Yep, everybody in the Pac-12. They've played 10 SEC teams. So who haven't they played? They haven't played Mississippi State. They haven't played Auburn. They've never played Kentucky. See, that would be one. That would be one. Because just the regional aspect of it. Like, you know, like it wouldn't do a whole lot for you, but I wouldn't mind seeing a home-and-home with Kentucky. They're a regional team.
That's fair.
And then what about the Big Ten? Who haven't they played in the Big Ten? So let's see. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. They've played everybody in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. So it's only the SEC is really the only league that there's teams that they haven't played before. Let's see.
That's crazy.
There's one. There's got to be Big 12. Has to be something in the Big 12. Who are we missing in the – they've never played Kansas State before.
They've never played Kansas State.
There's one more team in the Big 12 that they haven't played, and I'm trying to figure out who it is. They've played Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. They've never played Texas Tech, and I could not care less about playing Texas Tech or Kansas State, to be completely honest with you. So I guess Auburn, there's tradition there, you know, getting to play in the Plains and all that would be cool. I think Kentucky would be pretty cool too. That's about it. Zero interest in going to Starkville for a football game.
If I can cover the game, can I go to Myrtle Beach when they play Coastal Carolina?
There you go.
Can we make that happen?
There you go. Sure. You can drive down if you want. I'm not paying for it. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah,
that's fine. I'll do that.
I'll do that. We can do that. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Good question. So part of the reason that we postponed today's show as far as a topic is I'm still working on putting our schedule together. And one of the things we're going to do early on is we're going to kind of break down the schedule, but then we're going to have some fun shows too. And one of them is going to be like, what are some teams you'd like to see Notre Dame play? You know, and it could be teams they've played before. What would be your ultimate Notre Dame schedule? So we're going to have some interesting, fun conversations when it comes to that. Jordan Schreiber says, how do you think the Buckeyes O-line is going to play under their new coach this year, Ryan?
I mean, I don't think it'll be worse than last year. Last year was pretty bad, to be honest. I think that getting Paris Johnson at maybe his more natural position at left tackle, I like the upside of him. I mean, he's a really talented player. DeJuan Jones, if he can keep his weight in check, then I'd like him as well. But, man, he was just playing way too heavy last year. Like, he was just a little slow-footed last year playing at, like, 360-plus. So, and I like the center, Luke Whipler. He's a good football player. So I think it'll be better. I don't think it's going to be great next year, this next season coming up, but I think it'll definitely be better than last year. I mean, Nicholas Petit-Frere was not good last year. Thayer Mumford was awful last year. Like, it was bad film. I think he ended up going in, like, the sixth round, and people were trying to project him as, like, a day two player. Like, it was just not great film for Ohio State last year on the offensive line.
Here's the question. Mm-hmm. I have for you. Are you talking big picture throughout the season? Or are you referring to game one?
I was talking big picture. Talking full season. Yeah.
Big picture, I agree with you. I think Justin Fry is a good football coach. And I think he'll have them going well. I also think that, to your point, I think you're spot on about Paris Johnson being in a better – they'll be better. Nicholas Pettifer, like you said, was not good last year.
Yep.
I still don't like the other kid at tackle. I think he should – I just don't – I don't see it. I don't think he moves well enough. I don't see it.
He needs to lose like 30 pounds, man. Like,
Then probably have, Matthew Jones at one of the guard spots. He's back, right? He'll probably be one. It's just not a super talented line, in my opinion, outside of Paris Johnson, in my opinion. Now, Luke Whiffler's a really good college football player, but he's like a Nick Martin type of really good college football player in that he is technically sound, good athlete, not really a great player. I mean, I think the point that I think your reaction to Nick Martin coming earlier is like, oh, wow, 51, that's overdrafted him from where he should have been, right? And he hasn't been great with the Texans. He's not with the Texans anymore. So it's not a super talented line, but to the question, do I think they'll play? I think they'll be tougher. I think under Justin Fry, that's something he's done a really good job with at BC and UCLA. Those UCLA lines, Ryan, were physical. That's one thing you knew they were going to be. They were physical.
Oh yeah.
Now, will it be by game one? We'll see. But I think they're going to be better this year. By the middle of the season, at least, they're going to be better than they were when this last season ended. In my opinion, I agree with you on that.
I'm just hoping that a two offensive line coach don't ruin Nicholas Petit-Frere coming out of high school and Paris Johnson coming out of high school, because that Paris Johnson kid was a freak coming out of high school.
Yeah, he was very good, and I think he was good last year. I just think some of this talk about him being a top 15 pick is like, hold on a second, let's let him
we have to see him play tackle first, right?
Let's see a little bit. But I mean, they're going to be more athletic on the edge than they were last year, even if the other kid doesn't gain an ounce of athleticism, because as you've said many times, and I agree with, Nicholas Pettifer was just not – he was not, as a senior in college, the kid he was in high school or early in his career even. Mm-hmm. All right, so here we go. Let's see here. Here's an interesting question. If the 2018 defense and defensive coaching staff was matched with the 2009 Jimmy Clausen offense, how many games does Notre Dame win? Well, here's the thing. That 2009 Notre Dame offensive line was not good, and that's the problem. And they had talent. You had Golden Tate, you had Michael Floyd, you had Kyle Rudolph. I mean, they had talent, but the offensive line wasn't good. That was the problem. They were not a well-coached offensive line, but – he did say, but here's my question. If you could give me the 2009 offense with maybe Harry Heastand as the line coach, maybe have the conversation, but I don't know if the wins change with Jimmy in that offense at quarterback because of the line. Like, and I think like they still would have gone 12-0 in the regular season, but how would they have fared in the playoff game against Clemson against that D line? That would be my concern, right? Like, yeah. Would the pass rush negate the advantage that they had on the perimeter? I mean, yes, they would have had an advantage. Michael Floyd and Golden Tate, I'm sorry, would have been an advantage over Trayvon Mullen and AJ Terrell. I mean, they were very good, but Michael Floyd and Golden Tate were better. But you got to have time to get those throws off. I don't know if they would have time to get those throws off.
That's fair.
So, but that, I think it would have been a more competitive game. I'll say that. I think they would have scored on Clemson a little bit. Would it have been enough to win? That I don't know. I will say this, however. I do believe this. If you could take the 2009 offense with Jimmy, if they can beat Clemson, which would be tough, I definitely think they'd beat Alabama. They would have shredded that Alabama defense. Shredded them. And I thought Notre Dame defense could have given Alabama's offense fits, because Alabama would have had the same problem against Notre Dame they had against Clemson. They couldn't protect the quarterback. That's my two cents.
That Clemson 2018 team, that defense was silly, man.
Really
that,
good.
That was just crazy. So yeah,
it didn't even have Dexter Lawrence in the postseason. That's the crazy thing about it.
Nuts. Who went top 20 in the draft?
Right.
probably overdrafted a little bit. But yeah, to your point, yes, it was a incredible defense. So a immobile Jimmy Clausen against that defensive line
with the 09 offensive line. I don't
right.
You know, and Frank Verducci coaching the O-line, right. I would have been concerned with. But then you could have said just have Jimmy pinpoint some back shoulder fades to Michael Floyd and call a bootleg and let him launch one deep to Golden Tate. I'm like, all right, I'll get you enough points. But you know, it would have been a much more entertaining game. I will say
that. Oh, for sure.
There's no doubt about it. All right, let's get to some more questions here. I don't know if we have Brian Barry. It says, don't forget about those Frostburg State studs, Brian. He is an alma mater. So the question was, who was the greatest player I ever coached? Uh-huh. I didn't coach at Frostburg State or against Frostburg State. I played against Frostburg State once, and they beat us, and I'm not happy about that because it was our rival. We played them in Raven Stadium the year after they filmed that stupid movie, The Replacements. That field sucked. But we got the ball back, a couple minutes left, drove down, got in field goal range. The kicker was my roommate, and he kicked the ball, and it landed closer to the pylon in the back corner of the end zone than it did the goalpost. True story.
I played at Frostburg for 1 year.
You did? I didn't know that.
Under Coach Rogish, yep. I was there for 1 year, then the shoulders gave out, and I came back home. Yep.
Ryan has been fired, so I did not know that. He did not tell me that. He pulled a George O'Leary. He did not tell me on his resume that he played at Frostburg State.
Beautiful campus, man. Right outside of West Virginia. It's beautiful out there. Beautiful.
I didn't know he went to my rival. I was going to have a conversation.
I was going to say you're a Salisbury guy. That means you were a triple option guy, right?
The story. They were my sophomore year. We were not, or you know, my redshirt sophomore year, we were not. And I started on that team, and then the next year went to the option. And, you know, but yeah, he George O'Leary'd me. George O'Leary'd me.
So. Oh, I did not. I did not. I told you I played in college before. I just can't tell you.
You didn't say where. All right, it's all good. It's all good. I don't care. It's all. I'm just
a couple of Maryland guys, man. What are you going to say?
Yeah, all good. All good. DMND. Let's see here. DMND 13 with a depot line. When and how would you rotate guys? Assuming if it's like 1A, 1B, but you wouldn't. If there's a clear number one and then a drop off, would you give the 1B a series every three series or so? We'll take a first crack at that. Talking about just like if you have kind of like a 2017 situation where you have a couple guys that you kind of don't have a starter, but you have two guys that you feel you want to play.
Yeah. I think I would. I definitely wouldn't do it every series. I'm more of a, like, especially offensive line. I want guys to get in rhythm a little bit. So I think at 2 to 3 series, I think per guy would be a good starting point there. I hate yanking guys too quickly. Cause I think, especially offense is such a rhythm and routine type of thing, right? Like a feel to the game. Like I hate just pulling guys so quickly. So yeah, I would say 2 to 3 series, then you get the rotation going. But I definitely do not like taking guys out too quick because I think it ruins the rhythm of the game.
I think it depends on – I'm good with a rotation if you have a set rotation. And it's what you practice and it's what you play. So like, for example, in 2017, I think it worked at right tackle because, number one, you're on an island. And so it's a little bit – the communication is a little different. And number two, you knew what it was. It was Tommy Robert, Tommy Robert, Tommy Robert. And if you got to a 2 minute drill late in a half, they both knew what was happening. No matter who had the previous series, if we get in a 2 minute situation, Robert's going in at right tackle. It have to be something like that, Ryan, where it's, you know what it is. It's every other series or every third series, whatever the case may be, they know what's going on. And we practice that way. And during the week, it's been that way in camp. It's been that way in practice. I think to your point, because you don't want to mess up the groove. And so if you don't have a set situation that they know and that you're going to do, then I'm not doing it. Right. And I'm not a huge fan of rotating offensive linemen, but I do think there are times when you have a solid veteran and a really talented young guy that, you know, I want to get that younger guy some opportunities, but it can't just be, well, this is the right series to throw that guy in. It's got to be something where everybody knows going into the game on series number 3, so-and-so is going in. I think it has to be like that. Because to Ryan's point, the offensive line is different than receiving core, right? Where everybody's got to know what everybody's doing, but they're not necessarily working together as much, except for like mesh concepts. The offensive line, if one guy is throwing off the timing, the rhythm, the cadence, whatever, it can mess up your whole line. And so I think that is the important piece of, because I mean, I'm assuming that's your concern, right? Is in regards to bringing another guy in off the bench.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. DMND 13. Do you know which coach isn't on the road recruiting since Bowden was on the road? What are your thoughts on having Bowden on the road like that? I'm all for him being on the road when he can. And my understanding is Coach Hestand was in a wedding, that's why he was there. And, I believe it was Tommy Kramer's wedding, but there might have been another one that he was a part of too, because some of his players are getting married. And that was, I was actually sent a picture of Tommy Kramer's wedding. It was really cool. There's so many, awesome. So many former Notre Dame players there. Like all the offensive linemen were there. They played for Coach Eastand. You know, Ian Book was there. It was really cool to see all those guys. Cause you see like, hey, these guys are brothers. I mean, they're not just teammates, they're brothers. Right. And they're sharing each other's lives. You saw, I mean, think about Hainsey was there. Eichenberg was there. Banks was there. Kramer was there. Brock Wright was there. Ian Book. I mean, think about where all these guys live now. They're all NFL players. Aaron Banks, I think, did I say him? He was there. I think Colin Grunhardt. I mean, these kids are living all over the country now. But they came back for that moment. And then you see Coach Eastand there, who's like foot and a half shorter than everybody else in the picture. That's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see that, you know.
I'm happy to see Tommy Kramer is locked on a little bit in the NFL after all his injuries. Very
he's healthy. Finally healthy.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty cool deal. That's a pretty cool deal. All right, let's get to some, see if we have any more questions here. I know we got some starred ones. Let's see if some of those are good. We are not Marshall. Ryan, with the success that team from the North, we're talking to Michigan, had with their DNs, how do you see Foskey impacting the game at the shoe? It's a good one.
Yeah, and that is a good question. I mean, so in Notre Dame's defense with Foskey being a Viper, he's playing to the weak side a ton, right? So it's not as easy to say, like, you know, I'm going to take advantage of who the weaker offensive tackle is. I'm just going to put him against the right tackle all day. Like, you can't unfortunately do that. But I think that when you get those matchups specifically where he's able to go against the right tackle, DeJuan Jones, in obvious passing situations, I think he could have a huge impact because that kid is a slow-footed guy. I think that the first step that Foskey has and the explosiveness that he has, I think he's going to be able to win outside track a ton. And you have Paris Johnson, who's very talented player. We've talked about a little bit, but he's going to be a first year starting left tackle for Ohio State. He's been inside a guard. So I think Foskey can have a big impact. I think the defensive end position just in general can have a big impact in the game because one tackle, you're just, unless his weight is down, he's a little bit slow foot and you got a guy that's going to be starting his first game at left tackle for Ohio State. So I think he could have a huge impact.
I agree. I think the guy that could end up having the biggest impact is one of the other ends. Either Justin Adamiola or Riley Mills. The reality is Ohio State knows who Isaiah Foskey is, and they're going to have a game plan to try to keep him from taking over. Now, you can't double him the whole game unless you just want to completely expose yourself to other things. But they're going to have some things for him. That gets made very harder if Justin Adamiola or Riley Mills has a big – or both have a big game. So if you look at the ends in general, Notre Dame's ends have to make an impact. It's not just Foskey, and that's what, you know, what Ryan is getting at. If they're going to take him out of the game, then that's going to open up opportunities for Jason and Justin and Riley and those guys to make plays, and they got to step up and do it. And those are matchups I like. I mean, I think DeJuan Jones is going to have a really tough time playing at the same pad level that Justin Adamiola is playing at. I agree. I think he is. You know what I mean? Like, I think Riley Mills is going to give him some problems athletically. And if he gets matched up against Isaiah Foskey, that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a big problem. Like, I could see him getting up under his chest and just driving him right into the quarterback, just launching him onto C.J. Stroud. I mean, you know, we'll see if that ends up happening or not, but that would be my concern.
One-on-one matchups with Isaiah Foskey is not going to be fun times.
No. And that's what was so smart about what Cincinnati did last year. They just said, it's not going to beat us. And they slid their protection. They chipped backs. They chipped tight ends. I mean, they had a plan for the whole game, and then there's about three or four snaps that I can remember him not getting blocked, and guess what he did on those plays?
You know what I mean? Made some plays. That's
right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly. Yep.
Sean Ziegler says, Brian, could you discuss some of the dysfunction that went on behind the scenes during the 2016 season? Was BBG not liked amongst players, and same with Kaiser?
How long we got here, Brian?
I'll be real brief. Number one, Brian Kelly was such an absentee parent at that point in time. He was never around the team. He had no concept of what was going on in the program. Several things. The quarterback battle. You know, Malik Zaire was the leader of that team the year before. And everybody just kind of thought he was going to get the job back. And Brian Kelly said the starting quarterback's going to be this, 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 and this, and this. And then Deshaun did none of those things or a few of those things. And Malik did all those things. And he still gave the job to Deshaun. It was very obvious in fall camp that there was some dysfunction on offense because of the way the quarterback battle was handled. Malik would have a great practice. And then all Brian Kelly would talk about afterwards was how great Deshaun was, right? It was clear during fall camp, too, that the offense was being geared towards what Deshaun does well, not towards what Malik does well. and that held the offense back. Brian Kelly gave Mike Sanford a lot more say in the offense that year and took some away from Mike Denbrock, which was a dumb move because Mike Denbrock did a really nice job the year before, and Mike Sanford's a bad football coach. But that's Brian Kelly didn't know that because Brian Kelly's not around. And so you have that was a problem. So you lost some really good players, and you know, you had some skill. I mean, Equanimee St. Brown and Kevin Stefferson and Torrey Hunter Jr. and CJ Sanders, like they had weapons. It just was there was no rhythm on that offense. It was a mess. But it was Mike Sam. It was just the players didn't know who the leader was. At quarterback, they didn't know who the leader was. They knew who the leader was on offense because you have Brian Kelly giving his input on what plays to call. You got Mike Sanford doing his thing. Got Mike Denbrock doing thing. I was told by players from that team, like, we would literally come off the sideline and BK would say something to us. And then Sanford and Denbrock would tell us two completely different things. And that would happen in practice. It would happen in film sessions where, like, Sanford would say one thing to his group and then Denbrock would say something completely different to his group, and it was a mess. And it was usually Denbrock was the one that was right. That was just the offense. I mean, the defense was several things. Number one, the strength program was a mess. I've said this before. I warned people about the 2016 season many times, and I got called a hater and all this other crap because I was told players were getting locked out of the gym. So they had to go get like memberships to like local gyms because they wouldn't have the gym open like all the time where players could come get work. They felt the strength program wasn't pushing them. We've had people verify that in the chat here. We've had people say, yeah, I worked at a gym and I'd see Tavon Coney and other players coming in all the time. It was a mess. Brian Van Gorder was despised by his players. And then they despised Brian Kelly for letting him stay around. And then, of course, Brian Kelly wasn't around. So there were so many problems with that football team. But it was head coach, quarterback, defensive coordinator was really at the root of all of it. And, that's kind of what did him in. Because if you think about it, that was one of the easiest schedules Notre Dame has had in Brian Kelly's tenure. They lost to a 3-9 Michigan State team, a 4-8 Duke team. They lost to freaking Navy. You know, it was such a mess, man. It was such a mess. But I could do a whole show. I could do a week worth of shows on each of those topics. But it was just Brian Kelly just not giving a crap and not being around. And that's what it boiled down to. But it was bad. Lawrence Adams with a super chat. Thank you, Lawrence. I'd give BK 50% credit for a championship in the next couple of years. 25%. This is great. I love this. I was wondering where he was going to go with this. 25% for hiring Marcus Freeman and 25% for leaving. Just saying. Lawrence, I was really thinking, because I didn't read the whole question out, and I got to get better about doing that. But that is a great answer, Ryan. I don't know. Were you here for that part of this show about how much credit?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Notre Dame was a championship. How much credit would you give Brian Kelly? I think you were listening below. I'd love to hear your answer. But this is a great answer from Lawrence. 25% for hiring Marcus Freeman and 25% for leaving. Yeah, that is a great answer.
I couldn't really argue with you or Vince. I think Vince said 20, right? And then you said 25.
He said 20, yeah. I said 20 to 25, yeah.
Yeah, I would give him some because, I mean, some of the players on the roster over the next couple of years are still going to be guys that he recruited for the most part. And hiring Marcus Freeman is a substantial thing. So, yeah, you have to give him a little bit of credit. You can't say zero.
Right. You have to give him – I mean, it just depends on how much credit do you want to give him for hiring Marcus Freeman, I think is really what it boils down to. That's what it boils down to. I mean, and I think it's a decent chunk. I think it's a decent chunk, to be honest with you. All right, let's get some more before I get out of here. Joseph Salvatore, any comp between George Karloftis and Owen Wafel?
No. I mean, look, Karloftis was a little tight, just a semi, but he was a true edge rusher. Like, he was physical profile, and he was a guy that speed to power convert, great hands. Everything was awesome in that respect. Owen Wafel is a guy that Owen Wafel is a guy that is going to be a pure interior guy, right? Like, he's going to be one gap penetrating type of nose in that system. I think he has a lot of power to him. I think there's an upside to him, but I would say he's more Derek Landry than he is at George Karloftis. George Karloftis is a kid that just went in the first round, and he's a true defensive end. So I don't see that comparison.
I think the only thing I see is I think they both have really good motors, really good motors. That's one area where I would compare them as well. Benji, 1801, Notre Dame just opened his 3.5-point dogs to USC. I love it. I love it. I didn't see that. I don't pay attention to that, but I love it. Keep the disrespect flowing. I'm sure Marcus Freeman is like, yes, Thank you. I hope we're dogs to Clemson as well. I don't know if they are, but yes, that would, I think that's good for Notre Dame. Matt McCarthy with Super Chat. Thank you, Matt, very, very much. It's nice to see Notre Dame recruiting in Massachusetts. What are your thoughts on Girby Lambert? Bubakar's high school teammate on three ranked him as the number 12 overall. They have some weird O-line rankings. Number 12 overall in the 24 class. Also has Notre Dame in on Bronte Johnson. I'll say the latter, no, they're not. They're not recruiting, even though he's from Fort Wayne, they're not recruiting him, and I think we all understand why. Ryan, have you had a chance to watch Girby Lambert?
I have not. I have not. Okay. It's crazy, though. Massachusetts, yeah. Back-to-back years having kids that rated that high. That's pretty insane. Go ahead.
I like Girby. He's really raw, but he's exactly what you'd think a 6'7", 285, 90-pound sophomore offensive line would be. Super long, pretty athletic when his technique is right, but his technique makes him at times look unathletic. But there's a lot of tools to work with. I mean, I think it's silly to rank sophomores, to be honest with you, in a top 100. But he is a guy that, for take the rankings aside, he is a guy that absolutely needs to be high on Notre Dame's list because he is 6'7". He's got some athleticism. He's long arms. He's got some toughness to him for a sophomore in high school. He's a good football player. He's got a lot of potential. I don't know if he's necessarily a good football player yet. He's got a lot of potential, a lot of tools. I mean, if you're talking about starting an O-line class off with Peter Jones and him, that's a pretty darn good way to start. No, because I think Girby's got – I'm curious to see when you get to watch his film, Ryan, what you think of him. But he's got left tackle tools to me with coaching, whereas Peter Jones is a right tackle guard guy for me. A big power player, right tackle guard kind of guy. That'd be a great way to start your 2024 class if you could. But I like him a lot. I mean, he's a guy that I think Notre Dame should prioritize, and I believe they are. I mean, Coach Hiestand has been on him for a while, and they offered him very early in the process. You know, I think it was on part of the.
They've only offered like four offensive linemen now, right?
It's like Peter Jones, Kyle Altooner, and it was like Josiah Thompson. I think it's the only four that I'm aware of that have offered so far in the 2024 class. So. Yeah, and you're never going to see a Coach Hiestand coach offensive line with like 25 offers out to offensive line. You're not often going to see that. Crazy like a Fosky, in the last 15 years in Notre Dame, who would win your did the most with least natural ability award? Who would be the greatest waste of ability award? I'm going to be honest with you, Ryan. For the first one, I'm hard pressed not to go with Tommy Rees.
Yeah, Tommy Rees is a good one. That's one medium.
I mean, he's in the top five of Notre Dame records, and he's not that talented of a quarterback. And he would tell you that. Right. I mean, and I'd probably have to go with him. Because, like, I wouldn't go with Chris Finke, because Chris Finke is an athletic dude. Like, Chris Finke is a
– he's that 4.5 something.
Yeah, he ran a 4.57 at the combine. He was faster than 4.56. He was faster than Hunter Renfrow. I think he was an athletic, talented guy. I'd say probably Ian Book. I mean, probably Tommy Rees is what I'm thinking.
Joe Schmidt, is he popping your head?
But he wasn't good. That's the problem.
I mean, he was good that one. One year he was decent.
Solid until he got hurt. He was a solid player until he got hurt. Who did the least? Who the greatest waste of ability award? I don't know if I want to answer that one because it's kind of mean.
Negative.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to answer that one in such a public form. I might be more willing to answer that on the board.
Yeah, we could do that. Or I was going to say maybe we could rephrase it to say like a guy that you thought could have a higher upside. But I think
Deshaun Watson left a lot. Deshaun
Kizer,
Deshaun Watson. He only won one title. What a bum. Deshaun Kizer, to me, should have been so much better than he was. But then there's guys like, you know, like I said, Josh Barajas. I thought was him. He didn't do anything.
Max Redfield was one for me.
Yeah, but he was at least still a good player. You know, he just I thought he was going to be like,
I mean, obviously they're different players than like Kyle Hamilton, but I thought he was going to be like Kyle Hamilton light. I thought he was going to be that dude.
I get that. Here's an interesting question, Ryan. John F., do either of you guys plan to play the new NCAA game when it comes out? Curious to see if Indy will be in it or if they will continue their holdout. They'd be stupid to continue their holdout. That would be so dumb, number one. But not only will I play it, I will go buy a new system in order just to play that game. Yes, I will play that game. I was talking to this with Angela. When that game comes out, I will take a couple days off. I'm just telling you right now. I will have stories ready. We'll have, and if breaking news comes, we'll report it, but I will not be working those 2 days. I'm just going to be completely honest with y'all. Nor will I be sleeping.
I still play NCAA 14 all the time. Yeah, 100%. We'll be playing. Yeah. It's the best game. It's way better than Madden, man. Yeah. It's way better than Madden.
Now, here's the question, Ryan. Do you play it? Like, do you play games? Like, do you play the whole season? Like, do you play each game?
So this is what I do. I take over a franchise. I build it up for 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. I redshirt the first year. I get my whole team, and it's my team, and then I play that final season when they're all like redshirt seniors or seniors. Okay. Yeah, then I play that whole season.
I will only play big games. Like, that's it. Like, I'll only play big games because I love the dynasty mode. I love doing the recruiting and the training and all that kind of stuff. Now, I'll do all the – like, I'll play all the training. You remember that? Like, the drills and stuff. I would do that, but – I didn't play many games. I just gets the coach in me, right? Like I enjoy the, you know, it's like one time I got really sick. It was like, gosh, it's like 2010 or 11. We just moved here. I got really sick. Like I was sick a whole week. And so Angela went and bought me an EA Sports, like NFL GM game. I loved it. Right. I mean, it's so much fun. You're just the GM. There were some quirks with it that I didn't like, but like the premise of it was a lot of fun. Here's something I want to address, Ryan, which I think Georgia is from nothing personal. Georgia's proof that you can win a championship with a three-star quarterback and two of the opponent's best offensive players injured. Look, I get what you're saying, and I don't know if this is something somebody else said. Somebody talking about Stetson Bennett, but the reality is Georgia's an anomaly. It's like Bama's won titles with mediocre quarterbacks. I mean, they won a title somewhat recently of the playoff era with Jacob Coker. You know, I mean, but those teams are the anomaly. I mean, because number one, they're recruiting it in a different way than most teams are. They play the game in a different manner. And let's be honest, the only time Georgia's, you know, won a title is playing they won a rematch, right? I mean, and a bunch of guys got injured. So I don't know if I would say. I think there might be a little sarcasm in there, you know, with the injury comment. But I just – and plus it's – I never like using the outliers as the reason to prove something. You know, just it's
exception, not the rule. Yeah. Right.
You don't use the exception to define the rule. Exactly. In my opinion, I'm not a big fan of that action. Let's get to a few more questions here before we got to get out of here. John A1, do you believe the 2022 Notre Dame receiver room is as talented as the 2021 Baylor room? Do you believe Chancey Stuckey would perform better at Notre Dame than he did at Baylor? I want to get your opinion on that. Cause I have a strong take on that.
I think it's more talented than 2021. I mean,
Than Baylor 2021.
Okay. Yeah, the Baylor 2021. I mean, because you had the Tyquan Thornton kid who ended up going second round, but he was overdrafted. Everybody knows that by the Patriots. I mean, he's a really fast, athletic kid who had a good season. There's no doubt. But I would say long term, if him versus a Lorenzo Styles hit their ceiling, I would say Lorenzo Styles is just a better football player. And I think that 2022, he might even be a better version. I truly think that it could happen that quickly. So, I mean, besides that, you have Tyquan Thornton and then RJ Sneed's a solid player. I mean, but he's not nothing special type of dude. So yeah, I think that there's definitely more talent in the Notre Dame receiving room. I don't even think it's actually that close.
Agreed. To be honest. I think overall Notre Dame has more talent. Where I think the difference is Baylor had a lot more experience. I mean, Tyquan Thornton had been a starter for 2 years. I mean, he had like 800 receiving yards like 2 years before that. What's the other kid's name? RJ Sneed, right? It was the other kid's name. He had played a bunch of football. So I think experience-wise, Baylor has the advantage, but talent-wise, their third receiver was an Ivy League walk-on, right? I mean, he's not seen the field at Notre Dame. So talent-wise, no. Yeah. Talent-wise, it's better. It's just it's inexperience combined with an overall lack of depth, I think, is the issue. So yeah, that's kind of my stance on that one, Ryan. All right, let's get to here. We've got Tommy Guns. Based on what you just said about Ohio State, if Notre Dame wins September 3rd, would you rather win the first game with a guaranteed rematch in the first round of the playoff or lose week one in a rematch in the championship? I'd take the latter. I always want to be the team that lost a rematch. I never want to be in a situation you've got to beat a team twice. I can't think of that ever working out in a championship format. The only time I remember working out it at all was Oklahoma beat TCU in a rematch like twice. for a Big 12 title in the last 5 or 6 years. There was a year, but that TCU team wasn't anywhere in the same ballpark as what Oklahoma was. I think it was a Kyler Murray year. No, it was it 17? It was somewhat recently they beat TCU twice to win the Big 12 title. But you go back to like 2011, LSU beats Bama at Bama and has to play them again in a neutral field and then loses convincingly. Well, of course they were going to lose convincingly. You're not going to beat Bama twice.
It's very hard to beat a team twice a year. Very hard. Even on the NFL level, like you usually see teams split in the division. Like you don't usually see teams sweep that
often. Team's like really bad. If you're talking about two good teams.
Exactly.
Didn't the Bills beat the Chiefs during the regular season this year? Or did the Chiefs beat them twice?
I can't remember.
But I mean that, but you are correct. I mean, I'm trying to think of some other situations where there were rematches of those situations. But yeah, like what was it the year that Florida beat Florida State to win the national championship under Spurrier? They got pounded by Florida State in the regular season. I mean, didn't like Andre. I think Andre Wadsworth was the best Florida State, but they punished Danny Warfel. Absolutely punished Danny Warfel in that game. But then they got a rematch and Florida won, right? I mean, so that's kind of – yeah, I was correct. Buffalo beat Kansas City 38-20 in the regular season.
And then they beat them. They beat them firmly.
Right. That's nice. Yeah. Right. The interesting thing is Cincinnati beat Kansas City twice this year.
That's crazy.
And pretty close. But I think part of it is because it was kind of close. It's like less than a month apart. Mm-hmm. It's 34-31 and then the overtime game. I think that was more about Cincinnati just choking that game away than it was anything. I mean, Kansas City choking Kansas that game City. Away than it was anything.
They sure did, man.
Here's an interesting one, Ryan. Jay Montalbano, if you could have Keon Keeley, Caleb Downs, and Drake Bowen, or Justante Moore, who are you taking? Neither. I know where you're going with this one, but I don't want to have to choose that. You need both. If I could only have one of those, I'm taking the three great players over one great player. I mean, I'm going with that because, again, that's the Georgia model, right? Like, you can win with a okay quarterback if, you know, I mean, CJ Carr is not exactly a consolation prize. You know, he's pretty a good player.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Steve Angeli, I would take Steve Angeli coming out of high school, then I would take Stetson Bennett coming out of high school, right? Oh, you've got Tyler Buckner still and all that, but I mean, I'm still taking the three great players. I mean, I'm going to try to get better at not taking the total cop out, like, you know, with I want both and respect the question. I would take the three studs over the one stud. But the nice thing is they don't have to make that. They don't have to make that exception. But yeah. I get the point of the question, but give me three studs that make sure that you can't score on me and I don't need an elite quarterback. Now, the way that you build a program that's competing for titles year after year after year is you do both, right? And that's what we're going to find out. Is Georgia a one-year wonder like LSU, where just kind of all went together at the right time, or are they building a program? I tend to tend towards the former. We'll find out if that's true or not. Tyler Bedwell, in your opinion, what happened with Duval Kamara's Notre Dame career? It's funny when this question came up, and I think this – looking at the timing of this question, I think this question came up before you mentioned his name.
Before I slipped.
I think so. In your opinion, what happened with Duval Kamara's Notre Dame career? He came as a five-star and came in a lot of hype, but he never really became anything. Was it personal issues or just Weiss's poor development? So he actually had a good freshman year. He led the team in receiving as a true freshman, I believe. Or receiving yards, I believe. Maybe John Carlson had – I think John Carlson had more catches, but Duval might have had more yards. I'm going to look that up here real quick. Notre Dame 2007 football stats. John Carlson led the team in catches with 40 and yards at 372. Duval was second. He led the team in receiving touchdowns. Duval had 32 catches for 357 yards and 4 touchdowns as a freshman in 11 games. So – Ryan, do you have enough recollection of that tenure to offer an answer? I can certainly give my thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I think your thoughts would be a little more in depth. Obviously, I remember that I was really excited about him when he was a true freshman, and then I just didn't hear much from him after that type of situation.
Yeah. I think there's a couple things. I don't know if Duval, from what I've been told, was always the most focused kid. I think that's part of it. I think Rob Ionello was a horrible receivers coach. He had no clue how to coach. He was a good recruiter, but I've heard some horror stories about him as a receivers coach. And Duval was a kid that needed to be coached. I mean, he was not getting at it. He's from Hoboken, right? Didn't he play at Hoboken? You know, He was just a big, tall, raw kid. And I think the other part of it too is Notre Dame's strength program at the time was like, there was all this talk made of how when Charlie came in, guys got in better shape because Mo Stovall got in better shape. That was his exception. I thought too many guys kind of got too bulky. That Ruben Mendoza wasn't great at creating elusive guys, and I thought Duvall got stiffer. He was always a little bit tight, but I thought he had, you know, good vertical ability, good ball skills, but he wasn't taught how to play the game. I don't think he had necessarily the greatest work ethic, and I think the strength program hurt him because it made a tight kid even tighter. But he ended up having a decent senior year. Not that he put up a bunch of numbers, but he had some big plays. He caught 11 passes for under 12 yards. Remember, he caught a touchdown pass in that USC game in 2010 that helped Notre Dame beat USC for the first time in like 8 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he had his moments. You know, he had his moments where he ended up, he ended up having some impact on Notre Dame. There's no question about it. All right. Here we go. Last couple. I'm going to get to the last couple here. Here we go. If you could build a receiving core out of the Irish receivers from the last 20 years for this year's team, who would it be? And could that group win a championship? Well, the latter answer is freaking heck yes. That's good. And it doesn't matter what combination you go with. Mine is my boundary receiver is Michael Floyd. My field receiver is probably Will Fuller.
We're going to pick the same team, aren't we?
Yeah, and my slot receiver is, I mean, last 20 years. So that takes us back to 2002. So thinking about that, I'd probably put Samarge in the slot.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I put Golden Tate in the slot.
Oh, Golden same Tate. Team, yep. Except nope, Golden nope, Tate. We're there. Slot. I'm with you.
Nope. I'm with you. That's my team. Nope, it's mine. Nope. You can't have it anymore.
I'm with you. Forgot about Golden. How did I forget about Golden Tate? No, I like that. I like that.
Yeah,
I like that. But again, I take Samarge and you take Golden, I think we're both realizing we're accomplishing the same thing.
Absolutely. Right?
I mean, I got my 100 catch guy in the boundary who can just win a one-on-one against anybody. I got my 4-3-2 guy to the field, right, who can also play in the slot, do some different things there. And then whether you go with Golden Tate or Jeff Samarge, I got another high-volume guy that can make big plays after the catch there. Because that's the thing. The reason I would go with Samarja, because he can work the middle of the field. His lack of speed doesn't become as big of a factor there. He knew how to get open. And he was pretty good after the catch. He was surprisingly good after the catch. I mean, two of the biggest plays of his career, like most of them, he had two game-winning touchdowns. One game-winning touchdown against UCLA, which was after the catch. And then he had a big touchdown against Michigan State that got them back in that game. Then Terrell Lambert ended up having the game-winning touchdown on a pick six. But Samarja had that slant. If you remember, he caught it in the rain, stopped. The guy ran past him. He cuts back outside and takes it in for a touchdown. It was after the catch. He was pretty decent after the catch.
I love Samarja. I love
Samarja. Yeah. That would be you, Samarja or Tate. I mean, either one, and I'm not losing to anyone. And I'd either have Tyler Eifert or Michael Mayer at tight end, depending on what Michael Mayer does this year. I'd still take Tyler Eifert now. Like right now, Tyler Eifert in 2011 and 12 was better than what Michael Mayer is right now. Mm-hmm. I think Michael Mayer as a junior could end up being better.
What about if you cheated a little bit, you could put Tyler Eifert as your big slot?
I'd still do that even with my 11 personnel. I mean, that's the thing is there could be a play where I'm going to put Michael Floyd to the field, have Will Fuller and Golden Tate or some margin, two and three, and I got Tyler Eifert as my boundary, right? I mean – yeah, you could do a lot of fun things with them. Here's a question of last 20 years since 02, who's your running back on that team? Who's your starting running back on that team from 2002 to now? Mine's
Julius,
easy.
Julius Jones.
There you go. Yeah. Good answer. Yeah. Good answer. That helps make up for the Frostburg State thing from earlier. This is going to have to be the last one. We do have to get going here. We are not Marshall. This is kind of going along the same lines that we've talked about. We are not Marshall. Brian Vince, insert Ryan for Vince, favorite players by decade, 1980s to now. So let's go one offense, one defense. 1980s is easy for me. It's Tony Rice. I kind of, my fondest memories of Rocket are more of 90 from the 90 season. So I kind of put him into the 90s a little bit. But Tony Rice, 80s on offense, defensively, and then 80s, it's probably Todd Light.
Tim Brown offense.
defense. I never really saw Tim Brown play. That was a little before my time.
I mean, yeah, it's before my time too, but you know, all of it is exists. Right. Yeah. All of it is the 80s. I don't know the 80s.
Tony Rice has a ring. That's kind of where why I go with it. And he was a quarterback and I was a quarterback.
That's fair.
I just was a big fan of Todd Light as a player.
Defense. I'm going to go with a personal touch here. I got a DM this morning from Mike Goolsbee. So I'll go Mike Goolsbee in the 80s.
Mike Goolsbee played in the 2000s.
Wait, not Goolsbee. Who am I thinking of? Who's the linebacker in the 80s? I am
off. Michael Stonebreaker?
Stonebreaker. Yes. Okay. Yes. The greatest name, last name of all time for a linebacker. Yes. Michael Stonebreaker.
There you go. 1990s. Who's your guy in the 1990s?
I'll go Bettis on offense. Defensively,
I'm going tough. BY. I'm going BY on defense.
Bryant Young. Yeah.
He was my favorite guy. Now my favorite player of the 90s was I'd probably have to go with, this is going to sound a little weird, my favorite Notre Dame player of the 90s was probably Jerris Jackson. Favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Jerome Bettis was the best, but like, just, you know, he was part of a great backfield, and it's, you know, him and Reggie were, I kind of put them together, but I loved watching Jerris Jackson play, and I felt bad for him because he always played on such bad teams, but he'd probably be my guy in the 90s. 2000s. Favorite player of the 2000s, Ryan, for me, it's easy. It's Brady Quinn on offense. There's little doubt about that. And probably go Justin Tuck on defense.
My offense would probably be, I love Jeff Samardzija, so I'll go Jeff Samardzija. And then defensively, I'll go Tom Zbikowski.
I knew you were going to go there.
I love Tom Zbikowski, man. He's so much fun.
He was a good kid. I actually worked with him at a Bowling Green camp when he was in high school, when Urban Meyer was the head coach at Bowling Green. Yeah, he attended one of their camps. He's a good kid.
Nice. Yeah.
2010s. All right, who's your favorite player in the 2010s? Offense and defense.
Quentin Nelson.
It's a little tougher because I kind of covered the team then. So it's like, I look at him a little differently, like less as a fan than I did in like the 90s and 2000s, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit tougher.
I would say that offensively it's Quentin Nelson. Yeah. Defensively, Monty Te'o.
It's hard. It's challenging to pick between Will Fuller and Quentin Nelson because they're both so dominant. So I'm going to cheat and take both of them. Defensively,
you can't do that.
I can't.
What?
see that right up there, right? That right up there. Who owns that, right? I do. So I'm going to cheat and take both of them. That's why I let you go first. Sucker. All right. 19 and 2010s on defense. You know, Manti's a good one. Manti Te'o's a good one. He was probably the best. Jalen Smith. I probably favorite, right? Not best. Because Sean and I were having this conversation the other day. Mm-hmm. And Notre Dame is, well, you know, Jalen was the best player. Jalen was the most talented, but Brian Van Gorder kept him from being the best. Just look at the production. Manti had way more production than Jalen did. Jalen was a tremendous player. And if Jalen would have got to play with the same kind of coaching Manti got, it's a no-brainer. It wouldn't even be close. But my favorite player of the 2010s is probably it's probably Jalen and Harrison Smith are probably my two favorites. But I'd probably have to go with Jalen because Jalen just did things on the football field that you just don't see. I haven't seen it before. I haven't seen it since. I mean, the tackle for loss he had against Michigan in 2014 was just stupid. I was just like, you're not supposed to be able to make that play. Especially like that deep in the backfield. Like, you're just, that's not fair.
Jalen's
probably my favorite.
Yeah, no, Jalen's a great one. I have a soft spot for Alohi Gilman as well.
Yeah,
so he's throw him out there. Kid. Yeah, he was.
He was fun to watch. He was that kid that just, like, you know, Alohi thought, like, if Alohi didn't have the confidence he had, he never plays in the NFL. Like, he has supreme confidence beyond maybe than what he should, which is why I love the kid and why he's been successful. But I think he was also a really needed attitude piece for that 2018 team. Like, you're talking about swagger. You think about that 2018 team. Who on that defense had swagger outside of him? I think he kind of forced that swagger onto him. And Jalen Elliott were both really confident kids. And I think they kind of, their swagger then I think kind of bled into everybody else You know,
his forced fumble against Pinkney against Vanderbilt, that just sticks in my mind so much, man. Yeah. It was such a great play.
He had a huge breakup in the end zone against Michigan that people forget when it was getting close to being a touchdown game. And he had a big, big play. Now it's kind of how low he was when a play needed to be made. You just kind of felt like a low he was going to make it. But yeah, that play against Vanderbilt was insane. Mm-hmm. Insane. So I think that's going to do it. I want to just make sure I got all the super chats. We actually have to get rolling here. But this has been a fun show. There's so many great questions we're not able to get to right now. Mace AK, the intel is on fire right now, so everyone join the message board. Hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell, share this podcast, and give a 5-star review. And as always, go Irish. Thanks, everybody, so much for being with us today. You guys did exactly what I knew you were going to do, which is you brought great, great, great questions, and you guys made this show be excellent. So thank you all so very much. Have a great rest of your day, and we will talk to you again tomorrow. Thanks for joining us on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.